This is a podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute that explores budget policies and issues affecting low and moderate income Americans. I'm Michelle Bazzi, and welcome to this policy briefing.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Bob Greenstein. With me are a number of the Center's budget experts. As you may know, we issued a statement yesterday on the president's budget, and within a few hours today, we'll have analysis up of one issue, the criticisms that the budget would be harmful to small businesses. I'm going to assume today that you know the basic numbers regarding the budget. I'm not going to go back over them. Instead, I'm going to focus on a few key features of the budget that stand out to me and a few of the key criticisms of it that have emerged. Two of the biggest issues the nation faces are healthcare and climate change. The budget takes both of them on. In the area of healthcare, many of the healthcare reform bills on the Hill that would achieve universal coverage would have costs somewhere in the general ballpark of perhaps $1 trillion over 10 years. The Obama budget commits to fully paying for the costs of healthcare reform, and it identifies the first $634 billion over 10 years in pay-fors. That comes in two categories. There would be $316 billion in pretty tough spending cuts, the bulk of them in Medicare, consisting of proposals that are based on or consistent with proposals that have been made by Congress's own expert advisory commission, MedPAC, the Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, known both for its expertise and its bipartisan, non-ideological nature. As one example, that commission has found the private insurance companies participating in Medicare are paid 14% more on average than it costs Medicare to serve the same patients under the regular Medicare program, and MedPAC has unanimously recommended that the overpayments be reined in. That's an example of the types of Medicare proposals that are in the budget. These are not ideological or reflective of a particular philosophy. They basically reflect MedPAC scrubbing the program and looking for where efficiencies can be achieved. There also were savings in Medicaid coming from getting better drug prices for Medicaid. If the Medicare Advantage proposals I just mentioned will be opposed by the health insurance industry, the Medicaid proposals will be opposed by the pharmaceutical industry. In this part of the budget, also found there is a longstanding Republican proposal to increase the Medicare premiums that affluent beneficiaries pay for the Medicare prescription drug subsidy. In addition to the $316 billion in that area, $318 billion over 10 years would be secured from capping itemized deductions for people who make over $250,000 a year. This is generating some controversy, so let's take a quick look at it. Tax deductions provide government subsidies through the tax code for various activities and expenditures. Most Americans basically get a 10% or 15% subsidy for these expenditures. Due to a tax deduction, a dollar in expenditure actually costs them 85 or 90 cents. But for people at the top of the income scale, they get a 35% subsidy. A dollar in expenditure for precisely the same type of item costs them 65 cents on the dollar, considerably less. Many tax policy experts have long raised the question of why the government should be giving bigger subsidies for such expenditures to people at the top of the income scale than to ordinary Americans. Now, of course, this gets one directly into the question of incentives for people to undertake those expenditures. I would note that under the proposal in the Obama budget, there would be no change in such incentives for 95% of Americans because there would be no change in how deductions work for everybody below $250,000 a year. For those above $250,000 a year, What the budget basically does is it returns those incentives to the levels they were at in the second Reagan term following passage of the Tax Reform Act of 86. Then, as would be the case under the Obama proposal, tax deductions for people at the top of the income scale would be subsidized at a 28% rate. One can look back to the period of the late 80s and find that whether it was home purchases, charitable contributions, or the like, they did not collapse when the incentive at the top of the income scale was 28%. Moreover, many people above $250,000 a year pay already at a 28% rate and deduct already at a 28% rate because they are subject to the alternative minimum tax. Bottom line, the criticisms of this proposal are very overblown. Now, I also mentioned climate change is another big issue facing the country. And as you know, the budget proposes to institute an emissions cap that would gradually tighten over time on carbon-based emissions as part of a cap-and-trade system. A noteworthy aspect of the budget is that 100% of the emissions permits or allowances would be auctioned off. Here, the budget takes on energy companies, which have sought to have a number of those allowances given to them for free. Across the political and philosophical spectrum, analysts have noted for several years that giving away the permits free to energy companies would not reduce energy prices and would constitute a windfall for those companies. In the words of Bush former economic advisor Greg Mankiw, a Harvard economics professor, giving the permits for free to energy companies would, Mankiw said, constitute a major form of corporate welfare. So the budget auctions off the permits. Now, some critics are already saying this is a big tax increase. An emissions cap could be considered a tax increase if it were not accompanied by a measure to use the bulk of the permits to offset the increases in energy prices that otherwise would affect consumers. But this budget does propose to offset the bulk of the proceeds to provide an offsetting tax cut. It does that by using the proceeds to pay for the permanent extension of the Obama Making Work Pay tax credit. Yesterday, when the budget came out, some responded to this linkage as seeming a little cynical or opportunistic. Analytically, such a view would be mistaken. If you go back a few years, you will find that when analysts, for example, Gib Metcalf of Tufts University, one of the leaders in the area, proposed ways to offset the impact that a cap would have on the budgets of low and middle income consumers, or you can go to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities website and look at what we have been saying for quite a while. People like Metcalf, ourselves, and others, way before Barack Obama had a campaign proposal, were saying that a broad-based tax credit rose initially with earnings and was flat and phased out as you got from middle to higher income levels, would be the optimal way, as part of a cap and trade, to offset the impacts on middle-income consumers so, in fact, you do not end up with a tax increase. Some of us have wondered for a number of months, having noticed that the Making Work Pay tax credit, originally proposed for a very different reason by Obama and his campaign, had the same features as the measures we all were proposing. We hoped the Obama people would see the linkage. They did, and the fact that they did, in our view, is actually a victory for sound policy. It also means that the claims that this is a big tax increase ring hollow and don't stand up. Now, I've mentioned two big issues facing the nation, healthcare and climate change. A third, of course, is the long-term fiscal problem that we face. How's the budget fare there? As you know, the president has said that his budget would cut the deficit in half by 2013. Two comments on that. First, for budget wonks like us here at the center, the transparency in this budget is very good. Unlike in past budgets, if we want to see, well, where's this budget really take you in 3, 4, 5, 6 years, we get to see numbers that include rather than exclude the likely costs of natural disasters, the costs of relief from the AMT, the cost of continuing relief from a cut in Medicare physician fees that everyone knows will never occur. What that means is both that the pledge to cut the deficit in half is tied to real numbers, and that you and we will be able to look each year and see, well, are they really on path to this pledge, or are they departing from the path? My second comment here is that the budget gets to a deficit equal to 3% of the gross domestic product in 2013, and it stays there through the rest of the 10-year period. Now, we and others have noted that what the nation needs is to avoid a debt explosion. To do that, the debt cannot grow faster than the economy. And to keep the debt from growing faster than the economy, you need to hold deficits on average to no more than about 3% of GDP. On Monday at his fiscal summit, Obama acknowledged that over the long term, more needs to be done. His budget gets to the 3% of GDP goal in 2013. It stays there for the rest of the 10-year period. But if we went out 20 or 30 or 40 years, it would bounce back up. So more is needed. And here, what this makes particularly important is how the budget deals with health care costs, given that rising health care costs are by far the single largest factor behind the nation's unsustainable long-term fiscal outlook. Here's what important to understand. Here's what the budget does in the health care area. It takes the base, the current level of health care costs, and it increases it because it insures 45 million people who currently are uninsured. But it also should slow the rate of growth of health care costs going out in two ways. First, through the measures I mentioned earlier, it lowers Medicare costs, and a number of those measures would likely subsequently be picked up by private insurance companies in the private sector, so there should be some effect on private sector healthcare cost growth as well. Secondly, the administration intends that the comparative effectiveness research and health information technology funded in the recovery package lead over time to research that in turn leads to payment reforms so that less ineffective or more costly treatments that are no more effective are no longer heavily paid for, either in the public sector or the private sector. But the savings from slowing the rate of growth of healthcare costs are going to factor in slowly and take time. So the budget uses other mechanisms, as I've mentioned, its Medicare changes, the cap on itemized deductions, to fully offset the costs of universal coverage for the first 10 years. When you get beyond the first 10 years, the offsets for universal coverage remain, and on top of that, the slowing of the rate of healthcare cost growth kicks in, producing significant and growing savings over time. Now, to be sure, we don't know how big those savings will be. That's a to be determined. How much will healthcare cost growth actually slow? And I don't think there's any question that substantial further fiscal discipline measures are going to be needed over time. That was the focus of Monday's fiscal summit. But I have a little difficulty with the criticism that this budget doesn't slash the deficit enough, or a related claim I've heard that's even more puzzling, that it doesn't include any spending cuts. As noted, there's $316 billion over 10 years in Medicare and Medicaid reductions. There's $16 billion in farm price support reductions. There's billions in reductions in student loan payments to intermediaries. Every one of those is really challenging politically. And on the tax side, there are lots of loophole closers, reining in of what Alan Greenspan has called tax entitlements. So if you look at who the budget takes on, it takes on agribusiness, it takes on health insurance companies, it takes on pharma, it takes on Wall Street equity fund managers who would lose the loophole by which they pay taxes at a lower rate than many middle-income Americans. It takes on tax breaks for oil companies. It takes on tax breaks for multinationals that shelter profits in foreign tax havens. It takes on middlemen and student loans. It takes on more vested interests than any budget I've seen in my 36 years in this town. I worry that it's already at the edge of political feasibility because it takes on so many vested interests. It's hard for me to see how it could gore even more oxes. I also haven't heard the people who saying it should do more suggest the additional oxes it should gore with specific proposals to do that goring. So this actually leads me to my two main concerns. One, will Congress have the guts to do what this budget does, or to substitute its own equivalent tough measures to finance health care, to finance measures for climate change, and to get the deficit to 3% of GDP by 2013? And secondly, will the economy cooperate? The economic assumptions here factor in the recovery package, but they also depend on what happens in the next few years in the international economy, which is inextricably tied to our economy, something that is very hard at this turbulent time to determine where the international economy is going. I'd like to end by addressing two criticisms we heard a lot about yesterday. Number one, the budget is a huge tax increase. Well, all of the tax increases in this budget only affect people over $250,000 a year, or close tax loopholes that in most cases shouldn't have been in the budget to begin with. And the bulk of what are being labeled tax increases is what occurs by rolling back Bush tax cuts for people over $250,000 a year that were never affordable to begin with and that are extremely generous. The Tax Policy Center has looked at these tax cuts. If I recall the figures correctly, the tax policy estimates are that, is that in
2008.
In 2008, the average tax cut as a result of the Bush tax cuts for people making over $1 million a year was $120,000 each. And by the way, the Obama budget doesn't roll all of those back. Look at what it does to dividends. Prior to the Bush tax cuts of 2003, dividends were taxed at a 35% rate. That tax cut lowered them to a 15% rate. The Obama budget puts them at a 20% rate. In other words, three-quarters of the tax cut on dividend income, which primarily benefits people at the top of the income scale, would remain. The second big charge is that these tax provisions will kill small business. I can only say that this charge is, at best, misinformed. At best. Look at the Tax Policy Center data. 91% of Americans with small business income have income below $250,000 a year. And most of the 9% that's above it aren't proprietors of mom-and-pop stores. They're wealthy investors who have passive investments in businesses. Small business owners, the real mom-and-pop owners, are winners under this budget, not losers. They benefit from the Making Work Pay tax cut. There's an elimination of capital gains tax on small business in the budget. But most of all, I think, they could benefit from health care reform. Health care reform very likely will include on the expenditure side new tax subsidies for small businesses that offer coverage to their employees and for those small businesses that don't. Today, they're at a competitive disadvantage with large corporations that can afford to offer coverage. If we have universal coverage where the employees of small firms can, through large pools that are set up as a result of health care reform, afford to buy coverage, then the small firms are at much less of a competitive disadvantage. In short, we have a number of people who are attacking the proposals to close various tax loopholes to curb excessive, in my view, subsidies that are now provided through Medicare and farm price supports to cap itemized deductions for the most affluent. Critics tend to say they, too, favor health care reform, addressing climate change, improving education, and they also want to cut the deficit. The Obama budget puts a lot of hard choices on the table. It's a much more responsible budget than most of those we've seen in a long time. I would now like to see the critics put forth their own specific hard choices, but I'm not holding my breath until those hard choices actually show up.
Thank you for listening to this policy briefing from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. You can follow us on Twitter at Center on Budget, find us on Facebook, or create a My Center account at centeronbudget.org.